Think Again with Borderlands Cooperative.
Join us for critical conversations about things that matter.
Every Friday at 10 a.m. on 3CR Community Radio, 855 AM on your dial.
And 3CR Digital, streaming live at 3cr.org.au.
So together, let's think again about important matters affecting us, like economics,
politics,
education,
health,
climate,
and what we can do about it all. Welcome to our 325th episode of Think Again, a program produced by Borderlands Cooperative, an organization working for social change for 28 years. I'm Jacques Boulet.
And I'm Jennifer Burrell.
We're broadcasting live from the 3CR studio on the unceded land of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. Today, we're catching up with some momentous things that have been happening in Australia and the world since we last talked before the new year in mid-December last year.
Yeah, well, a lot has certainly happened since then. Australia continues to be plagued by extreme weather events, including flash floods in Sydney and across Queensland, New South Wales, and hitting towns and holiday resorts along the Great Ocean Road in Victoria. Cars washed out to sea, camping grounds inundated, houses and all belongings ruined in many cases. Sadly, there have been some human casualties too, plus tens of thousands of animals perishing in both floods and fires.
Indeed, as these floods were making their destructive path, massive uncontrollable bushfires have been raging across Australia, with towns destroyed and huge swaths of land and wildlife burned to the ground. The key word being uncontrollable, meaning they are unable to be put out by the fire services, and we're getting more fires like these, contradicting those who want to make themselves and us believe that Australia has always had such fires.
Yeah, I think those voices are getting quieter and quieter anyway.
Hopefully.
And given these massive floods and fire events, many people in some areas can no longer insure their property or rebuild their houses. Well, I guess the insurance companies have sophisticated methods of calculating risk. Well, their business models depend on it. If only our governments could do something similar and use their resources or our resources for risk assessment and prevention to really prevent these catastrophic weather events in the first place that are indisputably associated with climate change. But that would require getting some backbone and really doing what's required. Putting a stop to all fossil fuel projects, the burning of which we know is directly responsible for this havoc. And the climate science has been telling us this for a long time now, decades at least. I recently watched the documentary The Giants, which is about Bob Brown's 50 years of environmental activism. And towards the end, he asks, what will we say when our grandchildren ask, what did you do? Or he asks something like that, meaning, as I recall, what did you do to prevent the destruction of the environment when you knew it was happening and you were living during that time? Such a good question, and certainly it will be asked of our leaders. What will future generations think of our current leaders continuing to allow the digging up and burning of fossil fuels, even as the planet is already burning and burning around us, when they know why, but cave into vested interests anyway, for short-term political advantage or gain, it would seem. And as it says in the closing song for the documentary. The closing song is called The Seed, and it says, you cannot eat money. When the last tree has fallen and the rivers are poisoned, you cannot eat money.
Which repeats part of a phrase pronounced by Canadian First Nations leader Alanis Obosabin, and that was in the late 1800s, so we probably haven't learned a lot since. Let's have a Listen to the Seed by Aurora, sung by Melbourne Indie Voices. Listening to Think Again on 3CR Community Radio on 855 AM on your dial and streaming live at 3cr.org.au. Before this rather early break, we had started to talk about fires and floods, one of what we call three cataclysmic events or clusters of events that have been intensifying since we last talked with you in mid-December last year, 2025.
That's right. Well, another big focus of our national attention has been the tragic massacre at Bondi Beach in Sydney in mid-December, with two shooters firing straight at Jewish people gathering and celebrating their festival of Hanukkah. Horrifically, 15 people were killed and many, many more injured. And it was a truly shocking and tragic event, which we're still coming to grips with. So, you'd think it would be a time for us all to come together as a nation to grieve and remember and perhaps start some healing, which I think has happened to a point. But I should say, there was hardly a pause before the pro-Israel Zionist lobby sought to weaponize it for their own political purposes.
Yeah, not to mention the federal opposition, which has now totally exploded. But they wasted no time trying to make political capital out of the tragedy.
Yeah, that's right. No shame.
And incredibly also, Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu blamed our PM Albanese for the mass shooting, accusing him of pouring, as he said, fuel on the anti-Semitism fire by recognizing a Palestinian state.
That's incredible. So Netanyahu somehow concocted a direct connection between our government recognising a Palestinian state and two gunmen shooting at Jewish people celebrating Hanukkah on Bondi Beach. It's bonkers. And I guess that's how you think or don't think when you live inside your own ideological bubble, with a very hard barrier bubble. But the most incredible thing is that this accusation comes from someone, the Prime Minister of Israel, who has been literally overseeing a genocide in Gaza and responsible for the deaths of not 15, but tens of thousands of people living there.
That's right. Netanyahu has been publicly defending and justifying a genocide in Gaza for well over 2 years now. And he's been responsible for the death of over 100,000 civilians, many of whom can't be even counted because they sit under the rubble. And remember, the International Criminal Court has issued arrest warrants for alleged war crimes and crimes against humanity for Israel Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, along with his former defense minister Yoav Gallant, as well as Hamas commander Mohammed Deif.
Yeah, and don't forget also the International Court of Justice, the ICJ, has declared the occupation of Gaza and the West Bank illegal.
Which are points taken up by many anti-occupation Jewish activists in Australia and overseas, including on this program over the last 2 years. In fact, large numbers of Jewish people in Australia and overseas have strongly argued and campaigned against the actions and strategies of the State of Israel and its Prime Minister.
Mm-hmm.
They have also spoken out against the support given to Israel by the US and most of its allies, and shamefully, unfortunately, including the Australian government.
Yeah, our government. So, in case he is listening, one piece of advice I would like to give to...
Fat chance he does.
Benjamin, just bear with me, Benjamin Netanyahu. If he genuinely wants to do something about anti-Semitism, rather than berate our PM, stop equating criticism of Israel and your government with criticism of the Jewish people and calling it anti-Semitism.
Mm.
So criticism of Israel is not criticism of Jewish people and it's not anti-Semitism. So please stop promoting anti-Semitism if you can. And you'd really, Mr. Netanyahu, you don't do Jewish people any favours by aligning all Jewish people, whether they like it or not, with your ongoing genocide of people in Gaza. So,
Moving on to some other fallout of the Bondi shooting. Beyond the immediate tragedy and grief and trauma, we had the Adelaide Winter Festival fiasco.
Right, it's festival.
What did
not
I say?
Not winter.
Oh, my God. Oh, my
summer
God.
In Australia, anyway.
I think I...
But we had the Adelaide Writers' Festival.
Should go back to bed, I think. I'm talking about the cancellation of author Randa Abdel-Fattah, who was scheduled to speak there with the festival board, somehow drawing some long bow between her solidarity with Palestinians in Gaza and the Bondi shooting.
Yeah. In their Weasley statement, they somehow suggested she was aligned with the shooting. That they did say she's not directly responsible, but they somehow suggested she was aligned somehow with the shooting by saying it would be insensitive to have her appear so soon after the Bondi event. But they didn't feel any need to articulate why. Mm. So it was just a Weasley suggestion, connecting her somehow. And then in protest, of course, at her cancellation, 180 other invited writers pulled out, many of them eminent writers, previous Prime Minister of New Zealand, for example, and all board members resigned, and the festival itself was cancelled. What a mess.
Yeah, it is really a mess, or it has been a mess and continues to be, because you don't see really anything meaningful coming out of authorities. In a following statement, South Australian Premier Peter Malinauskas, he dug his heels in, defending his pressure on the festival board to cancel Abdel-Fattah in the first place by somehow implying equivalence between criticism of the State of Israel and with hateful speech against Jewish people, as Jennifer said just before.
Yeah.
Again, what nonsense, especially as some of the biggest and most ardent critics of Israel are actually Jewish, as Jennifer said before.
Yeah, and as you also commented on.
That's right.
And the Australian government's response to it all.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, of course, it's all become very political. Caving into pressure for a royal commission.
As if that will be effective, mm-hmm. beyond the millions of dollars paid to elite professionals and lawyers and God knows what to run it.
Yeah.
You know, just the Think Again episodes in June 2019. And on the 5th of March,
August 2019?
Yeah. And on the 5th of March 2021, about the ineffectiveness of royal commissions. The one into Black Death in custody is one case in point, and the ones on the age and on mental health are not, or have been, not much better.
Yeah, so a lot of expense, energy, and not much coming out
right.
of them. Yeah, anyway, and the new legislation has been the other response, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Initially, it was one bill being proposed, and then it was split into two. So one to tighten gun laws and implement a gun buyback scheme, which was backed by the Greens, and which does seem like a good thing, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then the other bill, the hate crimes bill,
mm-hmm. which centres on the power to ban groups deemed to be spreading hate.
Mm.
And with such groups... Given as examples in commentary, including neo-Nazis and radical Islamists.
Mm-hmm.
So they're the examples given.
Mm-hmm.
And I do feel uncomfortable when we always highlight radical Islamists, because what it does is it's automatically connecting.
That's right.
The word Islam in it, right?
That's correct.
So it's every time you say that, you're connecting Islam mm-hmm. with a suggestion of terrorism.
That's correct. Yep.
Without and singling out that one faith. So, of course, the challenge will be to apply the deeming of who is to be included as a hate group. Mm. So the challenge will be to apply such deeming consistently and impartially, for example, equally to pro-Israel Zionist rhetoric that demonises and dehumanises Palestinian people, which I've actually heard in interviews on the ABC when Palestinians are called human animals and similar terms. So, as I say, the challenge will be to apply such deeming, who is deemed to be a hate group, impartially to pro-Israel Zionist hateful rhetoric that is hateful against other groups, and to anti-Israel, anti-Zionist rhetoric that does the same. So how will that be done even-handedly and taking the politics out of it? So that's a big challenge, because it's not happening much so far in public commentary. So I might add that when questioned by journalists, politicians have not been able to say whether pro-Palestinian groups stating that Israel is committing genocide in Gaza could be caught up in the legislation.
Yeah, that's right.
So that's pretty telling.
Exactly. Not to speak about the immediate knee-jerk when hate speech is talked about, and then immediately, as you said just before, say that violent Islam or something to that effect is what needs to be eliminated or punished or whatever, or persecuted.
Yeah.
So we should really understand that the leaders of the campaigns against this legislation, both of them...
Or both bills.
That's right. Yep, are not really interested in understanding the massacre or what led up to it. They just ignore, and so does the government, really, or simply brush aside the fact that the killers had no known identification with the Palestine Solidarity Campaign at all. They dismiss as irrelevant national gun laws to limit ownership of the kind of high-powered guns used in the attack, especially to curry favour with their likely voters in the next election, hunters, farmers and other gun enthusiasts.
And would be possible One Nation voters.
That's right.
Yeah. And so when, in fact, the legislation's also the ban on non-citizens buying guns does have some sort of relation with what happened at Bondi, the Bondi shooting. As a shooter, Akram owned six guns but he wasn't a citizen. Yeah, so I guess there is some connection in that.
Yeah. Overall, the popular revulsion at the Bondi killings was made into a springboard for a malicious and broader agenda alongside the Netanyahu, Zionist and US strategies, and that is crushing the Palestine movement and legitimizing a more oppressive political and legal environment in the name of tackling anti-Semitism and religious and ideological motivated extremism, and then especially as a positive purpose, and that is protecting social cohesion, whatever that may mean.
Yeah, which doesn't make people less cynical about the term social cohesion when it's used in this way.
Exactly.
Yeah, so I guess one good thing is that the initial anti-vilification provisions were dropped from the hate crimes bill, as they focused on vilification based on race, but not religion, which would not have protected people of Muslim faith in the face of rising anti-Islamism. But it would have protected people of Jewish faith as they fall within legal definitions of race.
Yeah,
so a lot of people are arguing for expansion, and if that expansion of who would be included in the vilification. Yeah,
particularly also as we psychologize, in a way, the anti-Islam movement, because we call it a phobia.
Yeah, which I deliberately didn't do.
Rather than it being direct political.
Reducing people to spiders or snakes.
Absolutely. And as we have shared in another program in December last year, the genocide in Gaza and increasingly in the West Bank has not ended. And it's still ongoing. Israel has violated the so-called ceasefire nearly 1,000 times in the past 3 months, as I mentioned in that program in December. And the so-called development plans for Gaza under Trump's control are exactly what they were meant to be. And they become a justification for the total takeover of Gaza by Israel, by the Western elites, and for making the way to gain direct and unchallenged access to the gas along the Gaza seaboard.
Mm.
And every day, Al Jazeera tells us about another number of Palestinians murdered by Israeli forces in Gaza or driven away from the West Bank.
And while this is happening, some would evidently like the new legislation to be used to stop protest against all of this.
Mm.
What is happening, including protest against the actions of the State of Israel, even those deemed to be criminal by international court.
Yeah, one really wonders how long the Albanese government will be able to hold this type of charade.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's right. And moving on to a third major development since our last program last year, we have been witnessing the megalomaniac spinning out of control of the US under Trump. And the implications for the AUKUS deal, which should be commented on more, and the bonding of our military and its goals to those of the US. But we'll have to leave a detailed talk about that for another day, I think.
Yeah, still, as it is so much in the daily news, it is probably good to offer a few hints as to what will be the basis of a full program in coming weeks. First, a reminder of the interview I held with Professor Clinton Fernandez on the 28th of November last year at the occasion of the publication of his latest book, Turbulence, Australian Foreign Policy in the Trump Era, which followed up on an earlier book of Clinton in 2022 titled Sub-Imperial Power, which details Australia's role in the imperial aspirations of the US and now especially under President Trump. Clinton explained Australia's involvement as a sub-imperial power, assisting the US in its attempts to maintain and extend its hegemony and in its imperial power with three foci: the Middle East, Europe, and China.
Mm.
And in all three front lines, as he calls it, Australia is assisting with weapons or military deployment, with strategic global business decisions and political alliances and interventions or statements. And in this process, our country gives up all its autonomy and sovereignty, becoming ever more a pawn in some other power plans and some other powers, plans and decisions, that is the US. And now we see the new face of Trump's reinvention of the Monroe Doctrine, to which we also have referred quite often in previous programs, trying to explain the actions of the US in relation to its early declaration of the Western Hemisphere, the Americas, being the US's sovereign territory, and that it will control and defend if necessary.
Yeah, and that goes back to the Monroe Doctrine, early
1800s. Mm-hmm. Yep, so we should not be surprised. As Branko Marketić argues in the Jacobin Journal, and I quote him, as Trump helpfully made clear today, the attack on Venezuela is him making good on his administration's new national security strategy, which made as its highest priority reviving the Monroe Doctrine, which Trump translated as the Donroe Doctrine, mm-hmm. in the president's words today, to restore American preeminence in the Western Hemisphere, box China out of Latin America, and make sure the region's left-wing governments are replaced by ones aligned with Trump. Within hours of topping the Venezuelan president, Trump was threatening Colombia, Cuba, and Mexico with similar attack. End of quote. And then, of course, there's Greenland and Iran and Gaza and China and some handful of other countries Trump's reenactments of the Monroe Doctrine may please to invade, attack, buy, or bombard without simultaneously hoovering up all unwanted migrant populations in the US, which is the second leg of the overall MAGA Make America Great Again re-election strategy. But there will be more about these events and processes in our next programs.
Yeah, you got quite a lot in there, Shark. So, meanwhile, we're hoping Trump is, I guess, overplaying his hand. Mm-hmm. In his unfettered explosions of hubris.
Yeah, who knows? Who knows when that is going to happen?
And then, and I guess Australia would do well to follow Canada's lead. And in the face of the US's numerous recent aggressions around the world, blatantly violating international law to further US interests, so amidst all that, the Canadian PM, Mark Carney, talking in Davos, said that this is not the time to draw closer to the US, just when the world is starting to hedge its bet. So like many countries, Canada is diversifying its international relationships and alliances and not relying so much on US. And to quote Mark Carney, rupture calls for more than adaptation. It calls for honesty about the world as it is. We know the old order is not coming back. We shouldn't mourn it.
Wise words. Unquote. And it apparently has been heard by the Australian government, as Chalmers said yesterday. Just a quick one about Borderlands. The Borderlands garden, community garden in Footscray, will have open days on February the 7th. February the 7th and the 28th, and March the 21st. You're invited to come have a cuppa, to look for some seedlings, to volunteer and to help with planting.
Yep. And, of course, we have Invasion Day announcements. Invasion Day rally on the 26th of January, 11 a.m, Parliament House, Spring Street, East Melbourne. And then for the early birds, 5 a.m. to 7 a.m. at Camp Sovereignty at Domain Gardens. I'll just read from the advert. A day of mourning, Invasion Day dawn service will be held at Camp Sovereignty under the cultural guidance of Uncle Robbie Thorpe. It is held in solidarity with the Invasion Day rally and is open for all to attend. And so that's at Camp Sovereignty, Lynn Lithgow Avenue, Melbourne, 5 a.m. to 7 a.m. And for those who deplore Trump's We Have the Power and Will Do What We Want approach, just look at our treatment of First Nations people in this country.
Thanks for to all of our listeners for tuning in to Think Again on 3CR Community Radio today for our first program in 2026. If you have any comments for us, send it to borders@borderlands.org.au. And remember, our past programs are available by podcast on a variety of platforms and via the 3CR website. And meanwhile,
And we have no time for our music. Finishing with Milk and Mana today, and we'll go straight into our next program. Thank you for listening.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast. If you found it valuable, please consider donating or subscribing to support independent community radio. To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au.